This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
The little old lady from Pasadena.
Go, Granny, go, Granny, go, Granny, go.
Has a pretty little flower bed of white gardenias.
Shiny red super stock dog. And everybody's saying that there's nobody meaner than the little old lady from Pasadena. And she drives real fast and she drives real hard.
She's the terror of Colorado Boulevard.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
The little old lady from Pasadena. You remember that old bag driving around like that, disrupting everybody? Jan and Dean? That was during that time when all of those songs were coming out, like with the Beach Boys and stuff, about driving your car around in circles and stuff like that. And then, you know, I don't know. They had all kinds of songs about the cars. That's such a big deal for guys. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Excuse me, I am Paul Molloy, almost choked to death on it. And along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Wednesday morning already, January the 15th, halfway through the month. Wow. We really appreciate you being with us as we are on every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on the Tantalk Radio Network, 10 to 11 a.m. In a few minutes, Elizabeth Slattery of the Heritage Foundation will be here. And we're going to talk about two cases that the Supreme Court is taking up. Bridgegate. I don't know if you remember that bridge closure when Governor Chris Christie was in. Bridgegate. We can talk about that. And we're also going to talk about school choice in Montana. Whether or not a religious school is entitled to voucher programs there. So stay tuned for that. And Donald Trump was wowing them in Milwaukee, was he not, last night? Did you watch any of it? Meantime, the Democratic presidential candidates were putting them to sleep in Des Moines. So we're going to get some perspective on that from the proprietor of the only poll that makes any difference in this country, the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi. Also, Nancy Pelosi set to announce her impeachment managers today. Wow. Get your little pencils out so you can write the names down. They will go over to the Senate and try to convict Donald Trump. In the meantime, Trump's legal defense team is also named. We'll talk about that. And, you know, it's all football, right? We've just had, we're in the midst of the NFL playoffs, right? And we just had the National College Football Championship game Monday night. So we're going to give you the top 10 greatest college football coaches, according to Sports Illustrated. Let's see if Ed, I bet he does not know who number one is, but we'll see. Maybe he will. Anyway, we got a lot going on, and I can't wait to talk with Elizabeth Slattery about the Supreme Court. We got, you know, the Supreme Court has really got some important cases coming up on its docket, and they are in session now. So, as a matter of fact, let me just tell you a little bit about one of the cases we're going to be talking about, Bridgegate. Yesterday, the court was listening and took issue at the federal prosecution of two New Jersey officials convicted of fraud in Bridgegate. Now, that occurred, believe it or not, 7 years ago already. There was a traffic gridlock on that bridge that goes between New York and New Jersey. And it turns out that it was caused intentionally. You remember that, Ed? I bet you do, right? It was kind of interesting the way that whole thing came down. And Christie was kind of left flat-footed on it.
Didn't somebody call and shut the toll booth down?
I think there was an intentional delay. Yeah. So that's not the issue right now at the Supreme Court. A majority of justices wondered whether the public corruption in the case went too far. In fact, they appear to agree it was more about an unfortunate politically motivated scheme than some sort of mafioso RICO You know what I mean? Where money might have changed hands. You know what I mean? There was nothing other than political. There was no money or property exchanging, according to what some of the, I guess you could call it, the people that are watching the court. You know, they still won't allow the court to televise in the Supreme Court. I think they should. They say that somehow if you put cameras in there while all of the cases being held in front of the Supreme Court, that people will grandstand. Well, so, you know, come on, this is the 21st century. We've got cameras in courtrooms all over the country.
I just think they don't want the public seeing some of those judges napping.
Yeah, I guess Justice Ginsburg uses the court case time to take a nice long snooze. But so what? I mean, this is. I think the public deserves to see it. I think that they don't have much of a case. And yet, a lot of these justices, I think John Roberts is one of them, don't want the cameras in there. Anyway, several of the justices suggested that the employees involved in this Bridgegate had the authority to commandeer municipal property as part of the scheme. They actually could do it. But Justice Ginsburg did wake up to say that she was skeptical, and she pushed back at claims that public resource costs associated with the scheme were incidental. So it's an interesting case, and we're going to talk further about it with Elizabeth Slattery. In the meantime, I was watching some of that Democratic debate last night, and we're going to talk a little bit further on that when our buddy Andrew, the Master Barber, comes on. But this is the final debate that was held last night. It was held in Des Moines, Iowa, before the February 3rd Iowa caucuses. And it was pretty dull. I mean, the only thing that anybody's going to remember is that Elizabeth Warren apparently has accused Bernie Sanders at some point of saying that a woman could not be elected president. Well, Sanders said, "That's nonsense. I never said it." And, I mean, come on. No one's going to buy into that idea that Sanders would say that. And the truth is, and I think Sanders said it last night, Hillary Clinton actually won the popular vote. So nobody believes that a woman can't become president. Now, I don't know that the current crop of women running on the Democratic ticket, which would include Klobuchar from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, and Elizabeth Warren, I'm not sure they're going to win. I'm not sure Hillary Clinton was the right woman, but at some point there's going to be a woman that's going to come along. You know, I was listening to C-SPAN ad this morning, and a couple of people brought up the fact, boy, if Tulsi Gabbard was given a shot, she could win. As in, because she's not as completely far left as a lot of the, Elizabeth Warren is. And the only thing with Tulsi Gabbard is, and she's got a military background. So, you know, they can't say that, you know, because of that, there's just a little bit of conservatism maybe in her demeanor. But you don't hear about her anymore. And she didn't qualify to get on the stage. But it still was, it was kind of dull watching them talk last night. And it just gets to the point where all they want to do is talk about the gobs of money that they're going to, you know.
I don't know why you torture yourself.
I know,
you're watching the debate, then you're listening to C-SPAN. Why does C-SPAN have that bad?
I know.
I even catch you watching CNN once in a while.
I do watch CNN once in a while. In fact, I was watching it prior to the debate because they held, CNN held the debate, and they were all excited on CNN. They thought they had a big breaking news story. It had to do with Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, boy.
With Rudy Giuliani and his involvement in the Ukraine, it was nothing. Yeah, it's a nothing burger.
I saw the debate was on. I called my dentist and asked for a couple of root canals.
Yeah, that's more enjoyable, I know. Okay, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about something I think very interesting. Very interesting. Two Supreme Court cases that are going on right now with Elizabeth Slattery.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby, do the locomotion.
I know you get to like it if you give it a chance now.
Come on, baby, do the locomotion.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're back on a Wednesday morning and delighted to have Elizabeth Slattery with us. She is a legal fellow at the Great Heritage Foundation, and she authored a piece the other day about the Supreme Court and two of the seven or eight cases that they're looking at right now. One is called Bridgegate, which we were talking about just a few minutes ago, Elizabeth, here, and the second one has to do with Montana Department of Revenue and whether or not religious organization can get some funding. So let's start with this Bridgegate. A lot of people may have forgotten about it, but Chris Christie was the, I believe, the governor at the time that this occurred. And some of his cohorts apparently shut down the bridge that goes between New Jersey and New York. And so what exactly are the what is the Supreme Court looking at in this particular case?
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Believe me.
Yeah. So in the Bridgegate case, Kelly versus United States, the Supreme Court heard oral argument yesterday morning in that case. And what happened was a couple of aides to then-Governor Chris Christie implemented a plan to punish the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, because he would not endorse the governor's bid for reelection. So there had been this decades-long agreement that of the 12 inbound lanes on the George Washington Bridge into Manhattan, three of them would be allocated to Fort Lee for incoming traffic during rush hour. And so the aides decided, and there are emails that show this, that it was time for some traffic in Fort Lee. And so they didn't shut down any lanes. They just reduced the number of special access lanes from Fort Lee to one. And they later said that, well, this was part of a traffic study that we were doing after they were found out, you know, because this resulted in massive gridlock, you know, in Fort Lee for 4 days, and it was the first week of everybody going back to school. So it was just a nightmare, and of course it made national news and resulted in, you know, the famous Bridgegate name. So yes. At the Supreme Court, two of the aides who were convicted of several federal felonies are challenging their convictions, basically saying, look, they were charged with basically defrauding the government of property. And they're saying, look, we had the authority to do a traffic study. Maybe we had a bad intent. Yeah, what we did was petty and insensitive and, you know, not great. But this is not an appropriate prosecution. You know, the proper reaction should have been just a political reaction that, you know, they lost their jobs, they were fired, or there could have been some sort of political accountability for Governor Christie for, you know, having hired these people.
Right. Now, did these two people get jail time, and did they serve any of it yet?
I think their sentences were stayed pending their appeal.
Okay.
I'm not positive on that, but I know that that they were both in the courtroom at the Supreme Court for the argument, as was Chris Christie. And you know, they're basically arguing that this was a legitimate action, the concocted traffic study. So their intent really doesn't matter, and the federal statute they were charged under. A better example of that kind of conduct would be if a government employee, you know, had a government snowplow come plow his street or his driveway.
Yeah.
That would be a misappropriation of government property, whereas this, they have the authority to redirect traffic on the bridge.
Yeah, nobody made a buck on this. It's not like, you know, somehow, you know, money was exchanged or something like that. It certainly was politically motivated. I think everybody agrees with it. But interestingly enough, it looks like the Supreme Court tends to think that they might have gone too far on this from what I'm reading. Do you get that same sense, Elizabeth?
I do. And, you know, it's kind of in line with a general trend in the last decade or so at the Supreme Court of being kind of skeptical of overly zealous prosecutors, state or federal. And, you know, there were a number of tough questions for both sides. Some of the justices did not say anything or ask many questions. Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Thomas were all pretty quiet, but Justice Kagan and Chief Justice Roberts had hard questions for both sides. And, you know, at bottom, though, everybody agrees that, you know, the conduct was not great, but
no.
We need to talk about the bigger picture and what sort of precedent that allowing these prosecutions to stand will set.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Okay, let's go to the second case that you talked about in your article, and it has to do with what is going on in Montana. Apparently, the Montana legislature back in 2015 created a tax credit scholarship program providing scholarships for students to use at qualified private schools. But they have cited a provision in the state constitution that bars any state funds from aiding religious organizations. So what exactly is that all about?
Yeah, so the legislature set up this tax credit program. You know, a lot of states have school choice programs like this. It was a very modest tax credit of $150 per year if you made a donation to this scholarship organization. So then the organization would dole out money to income-eligible students who could then take that money and decide where they wanted to spend it at private schools. Originally, the state allowed funds to be used at any private school that deemed qualified, which included religious schools. But then the Department of Revenue said, well, we have this state constitutional provision that says that no aid can go to sectarian organizations. And so they eliminated the ability of parents and families to use the funds at religious schools. So a group of parents who were relying on that money to send their children to religious private schools that they felt were the best fit for their kids, they challenged it in state court. They won at the district court. It went up to the Montana Supreme Court, which said, you know what, we are going to strike down the tax credit program in its entirety because from the beginning it violated our no aid provision of the Constitution. So we're going to get rid of it entirely. So none of this money can be used at any private school right now.
That's kind of sad.
And it's very sad, yeah.
And also, it's not like a direct payment.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's something
that the U.S. Supreme Court... It's an incentive-based payment. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the U.S. Supreme Court has for a long time drawn a distinction between the government directly providing money to religious schools, which tends to fall on the wrong side of the Establishment Clause line, and then the government providing money to private individuals who then make the choice. It's an indirect funding, so they make the choice what to do with the money.
Right.
And they've tended to, the Supreme Court has tended to allow that kind of arrangement to go forward. Now, Montana, it points to a 2004 Supreme Court decision that said states could prohibit the use of public scholarship funds for students who were studying to become ministers. And so they're hanging their hat on that ruling. But there's a more recent ruling that the parents in this case point to, and it was from 2017, the Trinity Lutheran case, where the state of Missouri had told a daycare center that was run by a church that it could not compete for a government grant to resurface its playground because it was run by a church. And the Supreme Court said, no, you absolutely cannot discriminate against religious organizations based solely on the fact that they are religious. And so this case, the Montana case, gives the court kind of an opportunity to harmonize that previous scholarship case with the more recent daycare playground resurfacing case. So we'll see what happens there.
Yes. We're talking with Elizabeth Slattery. She is a legal fellow at the Great Heritage Foundation. And we're talking about a couple of cases that the Supreme Court is hearing. This court, Elizabeth, actually has quite a few interesting cases on its docket, right, besides these two?
Yeah. So these are just two of the cases that that are at the court in January for the January sitting. But, you know, last term was kind of considered a sleeper term. It was a little, you know, there weren't many cases that were really front page news. This term is blockbuster after blockbuster.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the Second Amendment. We've got Obamacare. We've got
federal
law and whether it covers SOGI discrimination. You know, we've got the dispute over the House trying to subpoena President Trump's tax records. We've got an abortion case.
Yeah.
I mean, the hits just keep on coming. This is particularly heading into a presidential election in November. This is going to put the court, I think, squarely in the minds of the voters come next November.
I want to ask your opinion of John Roberts. I get the impression that John Roberts is not the kind of Supreme Court justice who heads the Supreme Court that wants to see the court, how would I put it, the center of attention in all of this. You know what I mean? He's not like, oh, let's come out with some sort of a blockbuster decision here and really make our imprimatur, you know, on the history of the Supreme Court. Do you get that impression?
I think that's right. You know, his jurisprudence in the, you know, decade plus that he's been on the court, it's he takes a baby steps approach. He wants the court to move slowly. I think he's concerned about if the court moves too quickly in one direction or another, that will call the legitimacy of their actions into question. And, you know, the court's legitimacy is of the utmost importance because, you know, that is what undergirds the, you know, why we listen to the court.
Right.
Because we view it as a legitimate institution. And so he does not want the court to be viewed as partisan, as political. And so I think, at times he tries to avoid cases if they can and take baby steps as much as possible. But, you know, this term,
it's gonna
we'll
be
see
hard
what
to,
happens with the baby steps.
Yeah, it's
going to
be hard to avoid it. I mean, and it's interesting because, of course, he was the key vote in the legitimacy of Obamacare when he decided that, indeed, it was a tax. And now he's going to be listening to this case that may indeed completely obliterate the logic of that whole Obamacare situation. I mean, I just don't know. You just wonder how this is all going to end up.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The lower court ruled in that Obamacare tax case right before Christmas. So we'll see if it moves quickly up to the Supreme Court and what happens there. But Obamacare seems like the gift that keeps on giving. You know,
doesn't it?
Seems every other year we have another case up at the Supreme Court.
Indeed, you're right. Just keeps on going and going like the Energizer Bunny. Elizabeth, thank you so very much for coming on. I'd like to hope that we have you on down the road as some of these cases are being worked out. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Elizabeth Slattery, Heritage Foundation. We are going to take our break. When we come back, you know, Donald Trump wowed them in Milwaukee while the Dems in that debate snoozed them in Des Moines. Let's get some perspective from the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceraci.
Pretty woman, walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman, I don't believe you, you're not the truth. No one could look as good as you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Don't miss the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. We'll bring you up to speed on craft beer events and festivals, local breweries, and interview the brains behind the brews. So grab a pint and listen to the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network, and visit the website, thecraftbeerhour.com.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why don't you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, Bowling Stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life's struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back, and delighted to have our buddy Andrew, the Master Barber, joining us. And Andrew, I just have hot off the wire. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has now announced the seven people who will serve as the House managers to prosecute the case against Donald Trump. And believe it or not, the guy that's going to head the, what's all of that? Oh, okay. I thought maybe that was Nancy getting her dentures into her mouth. The House managers, will include your buddy Adam Schiff, who is going to be the lead manager, and who, of course, led much of the impeachment inquiry. Also, Jerry Nadler will be there, and Hakeem Jeffries from New York, Jason Crow from Colorado, Val Demings from our state here, Florida, Sylvia Garcia from Texas, and Zoe Lofgren from California. So we have the Magnificent Seven that will be wandering down to the Senate. I want to get your perspective. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. What do you think?
Is it called the Seven Dwarfs or what?
Yeah, well, we could call them the Seven Dwarfs or the Magnificent Seven. It depends on what political party you're emanating from. But so we got.
Paul,
go ahead.
Did you see Trump's rally last night?
I did see part of it in Milwaukee. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you know what? I didn't realize he brought back the old light bulb and the shower heads. Did you hear him?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Tell us about
it. He says, I couldn't stand just using these LED things. He goes, you know, first of all, he said, do you realize these LED things, you're supposed to dispose of them properly because of the gases that are in them?
Yeah.
He goes, how many of you ever dispose these bulbs of properly? He said, nobody.
Nobody.
Goes,
you throw it into the garbage.
All over the place with all these poison gases. He goes, I bought back the regular light bulb because I was tired of seeing orange all the time with those LEDs. So you can buy regular light bulbs now. And you know what else he did?
What?
He brought a standard shower head back, too. He said, did you go in the shower and you turn on the water and it just trickles on you? He says, you can't take a shower. You're all soaked up and don't rinse you off. And he brought back washing machines with full loads of water.
I love it.
Okay. Yeah. That really surprised me. It's something I didn't know.
No, I didn't.
But anyway, you had to get back to the impeachment. Let's go, because you know nothing's going to happen there. Well, it's going to be the best clown show we can have.
In fact, McConnell is setting the stage himself, and they have already named the lawyers that will defend Donald Trump. There's a pack of them there. The interesting thing will be whether or not any witnesses are brought out. And as you know, they would like to bring Bolton, the former Secretary of Defense for Donald Trump. The Democrats think that he might have something on Trump when it comes to the Ukraine. But then a lot of people say, be careful what you wish for with Bolton.
Because that's right, because Bolton comes out and he's going to say that Trump needed to do a better job getting rid of Mr. Salami there and everybody else.
Exactly.
They don't realize he's a warmonger.
Exactly right. So they better be very careful about that. I would love to see Hunter Biden, the son of Joe Biden, come on and have to defend just how in the heck he got the job, with Burisma while his dad was vice president, and that had nothing to do with trying to get access to Biden.
What I'm anxious to see now with this impeachment going on, I'm curious if Durham's going to start throwing things out there a little bit at a time now with his investigation at the same time this is happening.
That's a good question. I would think he would. I think it's a good question. I would think he would want to wait until that was over with. That's my guess, because he would not want, first of all, it would be like, how would you say it? It would be less overwhelming or whatever if it was done during the impeachment. In other words, it would be I think he's going to wait until that. It's going to be a couple of weeks. They'll get this thing over with. They're not going to do anything. He's going to be it'll be over with. It looks like they will conduct the trial. There's a question of whether or not McConnell would say, look, let's vote first of all, and whether or not we should even have a trial. If he has the votes, they might say, forget it. We're not even going to have a trial. This is ridiculous.
That's right.
And
but,
Trump,
there are nine senators, that had kind of turned their back on Trump here and there, too. And there was a list of them on the computer this morning. I was checking it out.
Well, nine. You're talking about Republican senators?
Right,
There's not nine, I don't think.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
The only ones that come to mind is that senator from Maine, who's not necessarily anti-Trump.
McCluskey,
and then the one from Alaska and Romney.
And that's it.
Romney,
yep, that's what I say.
Now, I think Romney does have it in for Trump. I'm not sure about the Alaska senator or the senator from
Maine.
Yeah,
when it comes along party lines, they might realize their job is at heavy risk.
Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly.
What about Bernie Sanders saying a woman can't be president to Elizabeth? Is she hallucinating again or what?
I think she might be hallucinating.
Because I don't think Bernie would say that. He doesn't have the guts to say.
Well, no,
like that.
And it just isn't in his in
his
makeup.
That's right. It's not in that.
It's not in his makeup.
That's Elizabeth Warren. She's coming up with everything, isn't she?
Well, listen, anybody that says that she's a Cherokee Indian when she's as white as a ghost, she would probably make something up like that. Yes. In fact, some people are just coming out and saying she's nothing but a liar. All through her history, she's lied her way up to where she is now.
Well, there's more Democrats turning to vote for Trump than anything
I think
now.
You're right now. And particularly those blue-collar types, union types, people would vote.
The unions, that's right.
Union types, blue-collar types that would normally vote for the Democratic Party, I don't think they're going to vote for a progressive.
Paul, I got a friend of mine that's a union vice president down here. He's in charge of the electricians union. And he is so pro-Democrat. I sit there and laugh at him all the time. The unions, these guys aren't voting. They tell them to vote Democrat. They aren't voting Democrat, man. They know the money they're making right now.
Right. Exactly. I don't think that the by and large, the union people are going to be voting. I can't see them voting for a Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren want to take away their union health care.
Yeah, but the only union I can see backing either one of them are the teachers' union.
Well, the teachers' union are indeed more liberal. Now you got to. That's
the only
exactly
ones
right.
that I can see backing them.
That is true. I agree with you. I agree. None of these manufacturing unions are going to do it, and they don't want to lose their health care. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are talking about pulling away all health care programs, and giving you a government one-size-fits-all $30 to $50 trillion 10-year program that nobody can pay for to begin with. And it's going to be absolute misery. Misery. If you just think a little bit about the government running your health care program, you can just imagine how horrible it would be.
But, you know, one thing I'm glad about is old Bloomberg there's putting some of his money into circulation anyway.
Yes.
He said he's willing to spend $1 billion to get rid of Trump. I say let him spend his money and put it back in circulation, but he still don't have a shot in hell.
Well, I was going to ask you, now he doesn't show up at the debates. All you're going to see, but you know what? Most people aren't watching these debates. I know they're not. And
you got to be kidding.
So more people will see his commercials than would ever see the debate.
That's it.
So,
and that's what they're seeing. And his commercials are well done, too. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I know they are.
They're well done.
First
class. Ain't going nowhere, Paul. He's got a record.
Well, I mean, who do you think is going to... Okay, let me ask you that. By the way, we're talking with the proprietor of the only poll that really counts, the Barber poll. Who do you think is going to end up being the Democratic presidential nominee, in your opinion?
Bernie Sanders.
You really believe that, huh?
No, unless somebody comes out of the woodwork, Paul.
Okay.
And Bloomberg come out of the woodwork, but he doesn't stand a shot in hell. Now, who do they got? They got to put somebody there.
Yeah.
Is Hillary going to come out
of
the woodwork?
You don't think Biden, because he's a little bit more mainstream?
Well, I would like to see Biden. He's the one I'd really like to see, Paul. But, you know, if all these little millennials go out and they vote in the primaries, they're going to vote for Bernie.
Yeah. No, you may be right. And when you look at the polls and the way that Bernie Sanders is handling himself, he's actually, I mean, at least you got to admit, of all the people that are up there, I think he's the least duplicitous. He tells you the truth about the fact that he's a socialist, that it's going to cost a lot of money for his health care program. I think he's as loony as you can be. I think there's a screw loose.
And the millennials will follow him because they got a screw loose.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Well, they don't have a screw loose. They're just not, they're ignorant.
What about you?
They're
that,
ignorant. They don't understand how economics works. And I think he has a screw loose because by now, at his age, he better understand it, but he doesn't.
You hear about these videos that Project Veritas has got out that they're saying that if Trump gets reelected, the cities are going to burn and everything else.
There is a guy on there, and I did hear him talking about, we're going to go to Milwaukee because of the Democratic convention. They're going to burn.
What's
going on with that nut?
Yeah, but we'll find out. I don't think it's anything that'll last long, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I think Trump has got it. He's got it. Look, you know, Trump goes right to the people, Paul. He's right. He's the people's president. He's right there with the people. Look at the thousands that are following him.
Yeah.
What did that? They said that, what's his name? The mayor from New York. I'm having a...
De Blasio? De Blasio.
No, not De Blasio. The guy that's running for President, Bloomberg.
Michael Bloomberg.
45 people with Judge Judy at a rally he was having.
Yeah, Judge Judy is going to make a difference. There you go. Everybody, Judge Judy? Then I'm voting for Bloomberg. I mean, Judge Judy.
I mean, I'm surprised you don't have the Jerry Springer Show sponsoring him.
I know. I mean, maybe he should go into court and be on the Judge Judy program, maybe she could... fine him for the big Slurpee or whatever it is that he insists that.
He's going to ban the big gulp in the United States.
The big gulp, yeah, the big gulp. Well, you know, that's about the only thing anybody really knows about Michael Bloomberg outside of New York, that he had something to do with the big gulp.
That's it, Paul.
Uh-huh. Well, my friend, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and we're going to be, my goodness, by the time Friday rolls around, and then next week we're going to actually see this trial start, so we're going to... We got some real fun coming up. I would love to see Hunter Biden sitting there squirming while Trump's lawyers ask him questions. How exactly did you get this job on the board of directors of Burisma, which was being invested?
It'll be a joke. Get the popcorn ready.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Get the popcorn ready, Paul.
Okay. Thank you, my friend.
All right, buddy, you take care.
All right, talk to you Friday.
You
all right. Bye-bye. There he goes. Andrew the Master Barber. I don't know what was going on with his phone there, but I think that's where all that noise was coming from. Not us, right?
I think he's had his head in the microwave or something.
Yeah. all that high-pitched noise, my goodness. Okay, let us take our break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to talk about the 10 greatest college football coaches of all time.
Mustang Savage! Guess you better slow that Mustang down.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tan Talk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back, and let's not talk impeachment for a moment. Let's talk about the record federal government spending. I mean, they're getting so much tax revenue into the government that they, of course, aren't going to save any of it. They're going to spend it. The federal government spent a record $1,163 billion in the first 3 months of fiscal year 2020. That's October through December. Now, that's according to the monthly Treasury statement, which was released earlier this week. That is up $48 billion from last year. Okay? $48 billion more. But to them, it's not their money, right? While spending a record amount of money in the first quarter of fiscal 2020, total federal tax collections were only the third highest in the nation's history. So, you know, I don't care what they say. It's what they do. And they continue to spend more money than they take in, even though they're getting in a record amount because of the economy being so good. And it's been that way since forever. And now we're at about $23 trillion in debt. Isn't that it? $23 trillion? The interest alone that we pay is almost 50% of our outlay. Almost 50%. We've got to the point where nobody even understands it anymore. Nobody. In the meantime, Americans in every U.S. metro area experienced economic prosperity in 2018. That would have been, 2018, according to a recent report from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. I guess that's the latest that they can get. For the first time in 26 years, no metro area saw their per capita incomes go down. And it was only the fourth time since 1970 that every U.S. urban region experienced prosperity. So there you go. Wow. I mean, Trump's doing something right. He's doing something right. And that's the thing about the economy. By the way, I didn't hear them talk at all in the debate about immigration, abortion, or the economy. You know why? Because those are winners for Republicans. So there wasn't even a question brought up in the debate about that. Nothing. Zip. Okay, before we're going to kind of go sports here. I want to talk with Big Ed about two things. One is, since we had our show Monday, we had a great, I think a very exciting national college football championship game between Clemson and Louisiana State. And Clemson started out pretty good, but boy, LSU came back. And they have two great quarterbacks there, mm-hmm. and I bet those two quarterbacks are going to go early when they're drafted, right?
Yeah, Joe Burrow of LSU will probably go first this year, and then
the other guy's got another year.
Yeah, he's only a sophomore, so he's got another year.
So
at
he'll
least.
Stay. He'll stay, right?
Well, he has to stay.
Ah, okay.
So
those are both first round draft picks, do you think?
If it were held today, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, having to do with the Bucs. And you and I were talking before the show about Jameis Winston demanding a certain amount of money now to continue to be their quarterback. I don't know that he's in a great situation, right?
You know, and I get quite a few calls to some stations around the country that, you know, they call certain markets and want to talk to somebody that's in the loop there. And you go on their show. There's one in Seattle I do here and there. And I've told every one of them that I don't think it's going to come down to what the Bucks think that Jameis is worth. It's going to come down to what Jameis thinks he's worth and what his agent thinks he's worth, because this is his second contract. This is what they call the family contract. This is where he wants to set up his family for life, and he wants the big bucks. Well, if he were in the right position, he would be asking for somewhere of a five-year deal in the neighborhood of $25 to $30 million a year, so about a $150 million contract, or close to. Somewhere around, actually about 130. But the way the Bucks are actually thinking, they want the, I think their preference would be to sign him what's called a franchise tag, which means they have to pay him the average top five salary of the quarterbacks in the league, which would come out to about $28 million. So a one-year deal, $28 million, we'll see what happens. Jameis has come out and said absolutely not, or he would be very, very disappointed if the Bucks were to offer him that. He feels that he is in that neighborhood of $30 million a year for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're not even going to be close.
That could be
so he may have worked himself right out.
Exactly. It might be a good excuse for
could,
the management.
There could be another team that may give him something close to that. Maybe they always say, you know, change of scenery.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he's got the tools, and I think he would be an attractive quarterback for some teams.
I don't think he has the tools.
You don't?
No. Okay. He's got the arm strength, he's got the legs, but he doesn't have the brain for it.
Hmm.
I'm just saying.
Well, what I meant is he has the
and you gotta remember
physical qualities.
The off-the-field things. And when I say not the brain for it, he's not picking up where he's making his mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
He's not learning from his mistakes. If you keep doing the same thing over again, it's not a mistake. It's a habit. So I just think that I think he's going to work himself out. And I'll tell you another thing. Andy Dalton, who is the current Cincinnati quarterback, he's going to be out this year because Joe Burrow, who was in the national championship, Cincinnati's got the number one overall pick. They're going to pick him. Andy Dalton will be released. I believe Andy Dalton, at 31 years old, is in the prime of his career. He would fit absolutely perfect in this offense. And they can get him for half the price they would get Jameis.
Do you think that may occur then?
I keep putting it out there, and we'll see how I've seen it sticking here and there.
I have to remember that one.
And a couple of ESPN commentators have said that the same thing.
Wow.
So
very interesting. Thank you, Ed, for that. Okay, let's continue on sports, but let's go college. And we did already the top 10 greatest NFL football coaches. We're going to do today the top 10 greatest college coaches. And this comes from Sports Illustrated. And Ed, let's put you on the spot and see if you're going to know who number one is. Okay? Here we go. Number 10. Put the microphone closer to the... that's all right. That's okay. Much better. Yeah. Thank you, Ed. Thank you. Number 10 is Frank Leahy. Do you remember that name?
No.
Frank Leahy was the Notre Dame coach. He came in after Arab Parsegian, and he's actually considered a greater coach at Notre Dame. He won national championships in 1940 with Boston College at that time. Also 43, 46, 47, and 49 with Notre Dame.
Okay.
Number 9, Pop Warner. You've heard of Pop Warner football,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Well, Glenn Pop Warner, he He won championships way back in the early 1900s, 15, 16, 18, and 26. He was also the coach of Jim Thorpe.
Mm.
Okay, number eight. Urban Meyer. Remember him?
Yeah.
Urban Meyer, he won championships in 06, 2006, 08 with Florida, by the way, and 2014 with Ohio State.
Yeah, I think Lola bought him a new car when they won that.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding. Oh, well, you're laughing. You almost got me going.
She branded her smart car that.
Okay. Lola's our dear owner here of the station. All right, number seven. Eddie Robinson. Remember that name, Ed, right? Black coach?
Grambling.
Grambling State, exactly. And he won national championships with his team, 55, 67, 72, 74, 75, 77, 80, 83, and 92. He was great.
Former Buccaneer Doug Williams' coach in college.
He was fantastic. Number six, Joe Paterno, Penn State. He, of course, ended with that scandal involving one of his coaches. But he won a national championship in 1982 and 1986. Number five, Bud Wilkinson. You probably don't remember that name, right?
No.
He was a big coach in the 50s and early 60s. He won championships in 50, 55, and 56 with Oklahoma. Number four, Woody Hayes. You know that name.
Mm-hmm.
Columbus, Ohio State. He won national championships in 54, 57, 61, 68, and 70.
Didn't he make a great tackle of a player running down the sideline?
He did. He actually, I think he pushed him, or did he stick out his foot or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, right. It was against, I think, against Michigan. He hated Michigan. All right. Number three, Tom Osborne. Do you know that name?
Yes. Nebraska.
Yes. Mm. Nebraska, where he had national championships in 94, 95, and 97. All right. Number two, Paul Bear Bryant.
Right.
You remember him of Alabama. A lot of people would have thought he would have been number one. And he won national championships, of course, with Alabama in 61, 64, 65, 73, 78, and 79. Wow. Hmm. All right, Ed. We're at number one here. I want to get from you who you think was the number one Sports Illustrated greatest college football coach.
Well, I'm going to say Lou Saban, I guess.
You mean Nick Saban?
Nick Saban.
Okay.
Lou Saban.
Roll the drum.
I was going to say Nick Saban or Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz, but you said Saban.
Yeah.
Okay, roll the drum. You're right.
Which one?
Nick Saban.
It was.
Not Lou Holtz.
Okay.
Nick Saban, who won at national championships all over the place, but 03 with LSU, 09, 011, 2012, 2015, 2017 with Alabama. Nick Saban, wow.
You know, real quickly, when we talked about Joe Paterno, one of the former Buccaneer wide receivers went to Penn State. I said, you know, Joe Pa, as old as he is, does he know what's going on? He laughed. He said, you know, I was standing there one time and Joe Pa leaned over to the assistant and said, run such and such a play. And the assistant said, Joe Pa, we haven't run that in 10 years. No.
So maybe he was losing it?
Yeah.
Oh, you never know.
I think
know.
He was just standing there.
Oh, poor guy. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for the Craft Beer Hour with host Kenny and Bill. That'll be coming on right after the news. And we're back Friday. Remember, freedom works. Beneath the pale moonlight.
But don't forget WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3.
Listen.
Moving to the Senate, signing phase one. I'm Michael Toscano. By this evening, articles of impeachment against President Trump will have been ceremoniously carried through the U.S. Capitol building from the House to the Senate. Linda Kenyon reports House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has set the events in motion.
Today is an important day.
Speaker Pelosi announcing the members of the House will serve as the prosecutors in the president's impeachment trial. And then
we go to the floor to pass the resolution to transmit the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
The impeachment management team has seven members.